Did you know that Nika AATC offers self-paced online courses on a growing range of topics aimed at helping you improve health outcomes for people with HIV? These interactive courses can typically be completed in about an hour and cover multidisciplinary topics such as smoking cessation in people with HIV, geriatric assessment and integration and models of care, managing difficult behaviors in HIV care settings, and using Zoom as a virtual workspace. Self-paced online courses are offered on Rise, Nika AATC's online learning platform. Courses are designed for healthcare providers providing patient care for people with HIV, including physicians, physician assistants, nurses, pharmacists, case managers, outreach workers, and other disciplines. To explore online courses for HIV care professionals, navigate to www.nikaatc.org/rise-courses. That's www.nikaatc.org/RISE-courses, or click the link in the podcast episode description. Welcome to Nika in the Know, a podcast for healthcare providers in the HIV field. I'm Mariana Braitman. Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Carrie Johnston to talk about HIV and aging and some of the issues facing our population of people aging with HIV. Carrie is an infectious disease physician and has a Master's of Science in Clinical and Translational Research. She's an assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell as well. She provides medical care for adults with HIV and conducts research in the area of HIV and aging. Welcome back to the podcast, Carrie.
Thank you, Mariana. I'm happy to be here.
So let's just get started by talking about the current state of people aging with HIV. What do we know about this population? You know, just how large is it? And is it projected to grow as time goes on? What are the numbers telling us?
Sure. That's a great question and a really good lead in. So here where we are right now in New York City, over half of people living with HIV are age 50 and over. Which really is remarkable. And we're seeing that trend across the United States, where over half of people living with HIV are age 50 and up. In terms of numbers, that translates to about 500,000 people. So certainly a significant number of individuals and a large patient base. So it's important that providers for HIV care are really in tune with this population. In terms of where things are going, thankfully, with the advent of really good treatment medications for people living with HIV who are able to take the medicine, we're seeing an extension in lifespan. So there are some projections that by year 2030, really not that far away, about 70% of people living with HIV within the US will be age 50 or older. And we're also seeing this trend globally, the expansion of access to ART, thankfully, really throughout the world, has extended the lifespan for people diagnosed and living with HIV. So now we're seeing trends across Southeast Asia, across Sub-Saharan Africa, of longer life expectancy and a shift in the demographics of people living with HIV into the older age years.
And in terms of the biology of aging, what can you tell us about the factors that influence how we develop and how we age, especially when it comes to something like aging with HIV?
So aging is a very complex process. It's the focus of a lot of active research. And despite many ongoing projects, the every single detail of how the human body ages is really unique to each person. And there certainly are things that we don't understand in full. However, there are some common trends across aging biology. And we know that for people with HIV, one thing that affects people with and without HIV is chronic inflammation. This can be heightened or more notable in people living with a chronic viral infection like HIV, and it can affect the immune cell aging process. Ultimately, this may translate to a little bit of what we know as kind of faster or quote unquote accelerated aging, where people with HIV may acquire comorbidities at a little bit younger ages as compared to their peers who are HIV negative, but otherwise in similar demographic situations. Another unique factor about aging with HIV are the medications that have evolved through time. In the past 30 plus years, we've really made great progress in terms of diagnosing HIV, understanding the biology of the viral infection, which at this point generally is a chronic lifelong infection, except in a handful of cases where there has been a rare HIV cure event in the setting of bone marrow transplant. But generally, for all people living with HIV who have a chronic lifelong viral infection, we note that there's heightened inflammation within the body, and then the antiretroviral therapy medicines that are prescribed to treat HIV are very effective in suppressing the virus, but some of those early medicines especially were rather toxic. Patients can tell their providers, and probably many of us hear this all the time, about the earlier medications that had a lot of side effects, and some of them were very toxic to the metabolism in particular, and things like the mitochondrial function. And the mitochondria, as we all know, are kind of the powerhouses of our cells in the body. And there is a little bit of potentially a legacy effect of some of the older medications that were more toxic. And while they would suppress the virus, certainly could contribute to aging biology and some of the aging factors that the body experiences through time. So it's an area of active study. The medications for HIV treatment in our modern era tend to be less toxic to the metabolism, which is good. Although we are continuing to study things like unintentional weight gain with antiretroviral therapy, cardiac health, and other aging-related processes.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the studies or information that's needed to learn more about and address some of these issues that you're mentioning?
Of course. So addressing these issues is rather complex, as I mentioned, because there's a lot of different things that go into aging. A really useful research tool is to have a longitudinal study. And thankfully, there are some well-established cohorts. The MAX and the WISE study really come to mind as very well-designed, carefully orchestrated, and well-followed studies where both men and women living with and without HIV from certain kind of geographic locales in similar regions are followed. So these studies give us a lot of information with periodic standardized kind of check-ins and assessment of participants to let us see how people with and without HIV do through time. And with that type of study design, we can compare people who potentially develop poor aging outcomes to those who age more successfully. And we're very interested in research, both in what may drive more advanced or kind of less desirable aging, which includes things like cognitive dysfunction, frailty, loss of independence at home, things that we all think about when we think about how healthy aging may look. And it's really helpful to have this type of study design to compare that to people who age more successfully, people who stay strong and active and resilient, meaning that they're able to kind of bounce back from some type of insult to the body, such as a fall or a pneumonia or some type of illness or trauma. And so we want to study both the processes that lead to individuals having a more difficult aging road as compared to those who age a bit more successfully, so that we can really hone in on both providing services and early interventions to people who are at risk for more accelerated aging and more accumulation of comorbidities as compared to those who age in a bit kind of stronger and more robust way.
What can you tell us about life expectancy and rates of mortality for adults with HIV?
So that is a wonderful question. We know that with the advent of antiretroviral therapy, that life expectancy has been markedly extended. This is both within the US and worldwide trends. So that really is good news. We have data from large insurance database studies looking at life expectancy. Some of these early data came out of Kaiser's system, primarily on the West Coast. And we found that initially there certainly was an age, a survival gap between people with and without HIV, as many people unfortunately did not access medications at an early time, and HIV diagnosis was often delayed. This was kind of looking back in like the 2000s. Now, that gap really is closing, and we can be a bit more nuanced in how we classify life expectancy in this setting. So things like having a higher T cell count at the time of diagnosis, having lower comorbidities, meaning fewer chronic medical conditions, is also important in terms of lowering that survival difference. And so the bottom line is that the life expectancy gap is closing. And for many patients living with HIV, when it's diagnosed, an antiretroviral therapy is started early and taken consistently, there's a near normal life expectancy. So near normal, by that I mean compared to somebody without HIV, kind of at the national average.
So ultimately, what does all this mean for the type of care that people aging with HIV might need from healthcare providers?
The main point to take away from the aging with HIV and kind of the complex processes that go into that is that our healthcare system really needs to adapt and to think about people aging and promoting healthy aging for people with HIV. And a lot of this is multidisciplinary work. Having a medical team, for example, that thinks about nutrition, potentially with the role of a dietitian or a nutritionist, thinking about social support, both having social workers involved to engage patients or clients in social services, as well as an individual's social network, really fighting things like loneliness and stigma and allowing people to kind of embrace community is very helpful with aging. And I think the role of healthcare providers can help facilitate either through groups and aging centers, really promoting some of that. On the medical side, as physicians, we need to be in tune with aging-related cancer screenings and cardiac health maintenance, thinking about keeping our patients strong and resilient and promoting physical activity and healthy diet. As people age and often accumulate comorbid conditions, often comes with accumulating more prescription medications. And we know from multiple research studies that older adults with HIV tend to experience what we call polypharmacy, taking more pills per day, and that can be complicated. There certainly are risks for drug-drug interactions. Certain medications may or may not have sedating effects or could affect the way someone thinks, which is really very important for their day-to-day life. So having a broad approach to aging with a medical system that addresses the HIV and cares for any other medical conditions is very key. Certain healthcare systems, for example, where I am in New York City, we're lucky enough to partner with a geriatrician. So we have a geriatrics consult if we have an older adult who might benefit from seeing a geriatric specialist. However, we recognize that really not all health systems have the ability to have specialized geriatric care, similarly for psychiatric care or geriatric psychiatry. But those are things that I think we need to be forward thinking about. And if we don't have immediate referrals, how could we kind of establish connections and help our patients understand where to go and how to access the healthcare services that will keep them the most healthy? Because ultimately, really what patients and healthcare providers want is for people to have as long of a lifespan as possible, but also with an improved health span. So as many years of life as possible, being at one's kind of maximum health potential.
As we begin to wrap up, what else do HIV care providers need to know about this?
So our field in terms of HIV medicine is advancing literally every day, from the basic science discoveries to the large randomized clinical trials that look at many different facets of HIV biology, comorbidities for people living with HIV, and HIV and aging. So I really think the main takeaway is that we need to incorporate research into how we practice. I recently had the pleasure of co-authoring a review about different care models for older adults with HIV, thinking both nationally and internationally of how can we optimize the resources we have, even in resource-limited settings, to improve geriatric care. We have great data coming out. The REPRIEVE trial was just published, looking at incident cardiac events in people with HIV age 40 and up. So getting kind of ahead of some of these medical problems by prevention, and kind of prevention as treatment has really been a mantra across the field of HIV management and prevention. And I think we can extend that both to other medical conditions that our patients may experience. And the final takeaway really is social support and fighting aging-related and HIV-related stigma. So engaging our patients and allowing people to be very confident in themselves and have a robust social network and feel kind of very fulfilled both in their personal life and in terms of their health. Our healthcare systems are really evolving. I think the advent of technology and patient-based communication with medical offices through apps now has really taken off and become fairly mainstream, at least across many urban and suburban and even rural centers within the U.S., and including our older adults in technology use uptake is another way to reduce any barriers to communicating with the healthcare system. There are some early data, and this is something we're looking at, about asking the question, are older adults using technology in a way that's beneficial to them? Or might someone feel a little shut out from engaging with technology? And if they're not using that technology, are they not really seeing their lab test results or able to quickly request a prescription refill? Certainly there are very traditional ways of getting in touch with their doctor, but as things move more technology-based, I think another takeaway or direction for the future is to really engage all of our patients, but especially our older patients, with technology use.
Carrie, thanks so much for joining us and telling us all about the population of people aging with HIV, how their needs might differ from others, and why it's so important for HIV care providers to know about this. We really hope you learned something new today. To learn more about NICA AATC's work and our role in ending the HIV epidemic, visit us at www.nicaaatc.org. That's www.necaaatc.org. If you have questions or comments about anything we covered today, or if you have suggestions for topics you'd like to hear us talk about, don't hesitate to email us at podcast@nicaaatc.org. Stay safe, and we'll see you on Thursday for our next episode of NICA in the Know. This presentation is supported by the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement by, HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government.